Thanks, Mark. This will be a little bit change of gears from what Bruce and everyone else have been talking about today. We had the opportunity to work with some other groups on the little sequencing project that, got extended a little bit with the vacation we were forced to take earlier this year. it sort of dropped the ball on some of it, but, go start with
35.
What we're looking at with sequencing, we can't, all we do on DNA genotyping or sequence, we can't just read the sequence of an individual from end to end. We have to do some tricks to break it up and then start, create a library of randomly fragmented DNA and read ends from that and align those to a reference, to get the sequence of an individual and then, once we align it, depending on how much sequence we get, it might be deep sequence. This is the picture of what we say is 10x coverage. Where most of the genome is covered by several reads. There are a few spots where it's lower and some here where it's higher. Or you can do low coverage. This was from a 2.5x. Where we've got a couple spots, where we just have two reads covering a location. There's some gaps in the coverage. There's higher coverage, so that, that illustrates how it's, really a random process. With 10x, we can pretty well call genotypes. At 10x and higher, we're pretty sure we're seeing both alleles at a location. Lower coverage, down to 5x, there's about half the variance that we see in sequence. We can, at 5x, we can call both alleles. Lower coverage than that, it gets, I forget the exact numbers, but we're around 10 to 20%, we might be able to call both alleles. But there are uses for the low coverage sequence. We did a lot a few years ago on a number of GPE bulls, and that was mostly for variant discovery. We can, sequence lots of individuals at low coverage and get better idea of what variation exists in the population than by sequencing just a handful at high coverage, and cost would be about the same, if we sequence a lot and just do low coverage, and our idea was that, then we design other genotyping assays to genotype the interesting variants that came out of the low coverage sequence for variant discovery. And, now we've started seeing some applications of low coverage sequence, where you can't directly call the genotypes from sequence, but you can impute that low coverage up to higher coverage to, where you have lots of reference haplotypes and well-defined variants from in the reference, and so impute impute for the sequence variants from the low coverage. There's a number of human studies that have done that, and then we were approached in December, asked for some bovine samples to apply to this. A company called Riptide is working on this, and they wanted to something to throw in, they're in a pilot project. What this Riptide is low cost per sample library prep that, so they can barcode 960 individuals for a single sequencing run. And, you get fairly inexpensive sequence. What they put together was, they had 300 samples of wheat, 96 corn. We supplied 54 DNA from 54 different cattle. There were some, three sire families and a few trios in that. And they did some replication to fill up the 96 well plate. They had some human data on there, and as well as dogs for a GWAS study. What came off the, quality of that sequence looked pretty good. This shows the coverage, where we're targeting, I think you're around 1.5x up to 2x. We pretty much got the coverage we were wanting, except for one individual that was way up at, one rep of him was around 12x. But, one thing we noticed that, the coverage we got was related to DNA concentration of the samples we provided. So at the low end of coverage, that was lower concentration DNA, and then, the high coverage individual had a lot higher concentration than anything else. And, we got the data from iGenomics, and I ran it through our pipeline for mapping, same pipeline I use for mapping GPE sequence. So we got around 13 million variants called from that. 11.5 matched what we had already seen in GPE, so not a whole lot of new variation that was coming out. But there was, there's a South Devon bull in there that we hadn't sequenced before, and some other things that might be responsible for some of the new variants that we did see. There was, in what we could call, we averaged almost, could call about 7 animals per variant, but there was a wide range. There were a few, 180 that we called in all 53 samples, in lots of cases where we could only call one animal for a particular variant. And then the lowest coverage, we could only call 14,000 SNP. The high coverage bull, we got 11.5 million calls. But overall, this looked pretty similar to what we've seen from other data sets with low coverage sequence. So, I think we were just at that point just thinking, well, that's worth considering if we want to, for our next sequencing, that, we could, looks like pretty good data we could get. And they told us to wait until GenCope did their amputation. So what we got back from GenCo was calls on for 48 million SNP on these animals. And these were what they had detected in their reference panel that is predominantly Angus and Holstein, that with publicly available sequence, and then there are lots of other breeds in their reference. I don't know exactly what all is in the reference, but you know, there are at least a few individuals from several other breeds. I did classified, you know, the variants they were calling. There's, you know, most of them are intronic or energenic, and then they're, you know, relatively small fraction that might change the protein or, you know, interrupt the protein that is being coded. So we come up with, you know, with that classification, there's probably a million variants on there that would be interesting. 11,000 loss of function, 220,000 non-synonymous SNP that will change protein sequence, and, you know, the loss of function would interrupt the protein, you know. So, and then probably another 800,000 that, at least according to current annotation, might have some regulatory function. You know, so that's looking a lot more interesting if we can get all these calls accurately. So we started looking at accuracy of those imputed calls versus what we had called on a chip. And what I found really encouraging was that at the low minor allele frequency, we get a pretty high accuracy, high agreement between the chip calls and what GenCove imputed. But, you know, that drops with higher frequency, and that's completely opposite of what we typically see from imputing chip genotypes up to sequence variants, where, you know, at low frequencies we can impute well, but we pretty much nail the moderate to high allele frequency variants. So we started looking more into what was going on. You know, the first set they imputed, there were only 21 animals, with a lot of them were replicated. You know, and that set included two sire progeny pairs. There was, you know, one pair, we, you know, all six replicates of the sire matched the progeny. There's another pair that we got more exclusions between the progeny and the sire than we did for most other samples in the data set. So looked at concordance between that progeny and between the imputed and what we called off the chip. 64% agreement looks more like it. We got the wrong sample than anything else. The bull's agreement between the imputed genotypes and chip genotypes was between 92% and 99%. You know, across six replicates. You know, so it's not perfect, but at least it looks like the same animal. You know, so then we did the same comparison for the rest of the 53 animals. Now, there are cases where we could get that high agreement, but, you know, a lot of, you know, down here, that looks more like it could be the wrong DNA. I don't, or at least that's what I was thinking at the time. And then there's a lot in this 0.8 to between 0.8 and 9.5 that, you know, it's just not what we wanted for what we would really want to use in a, to use these genotypes in a genomic evaluation. You know, so we thought, you know, there is, it's possible to get good agreement, but why didn't we get it on all samples? That could be some sample ID problems, potentially some contamination, or problems with the imputation reference. So the kind of, to look at that, we gave GenCode some sequence we had generated from GPE, and they downsampled that to between 0.4x and 2x, one bull from each of the cycle 7 breeds, all of the indicus composites and Brahman. These top three are the, you know, at the lowest downsampled coverage, we got better than 0.99 agreement, you know, up above 0.995. Those are Red Angus, and a Hereford bull. The continental breeds, you know, Charlet, Limousin, Gelby, and Simmental, you know, aren't that high, but at least above 0.98. And then these three down here are the Brahman and Indicus composites, where we're not imputing them as well as we could any of the straight Taurus breeds. You also use that data to look at breed composition we get from the down-sampled sequence. You know, there are four of those bulls came out of that as 100% of the breed of their breed. You know, some of that's sort of surprise. You know, you'd expect a Hereford bull to be Hereford, and you know, it's interesting on Limousin had some, that bull was, you know, according, I looked him up on the association website, and he's, you know, he's a 7/8 Limousin. We did get the Santa Gertrudis bull is 100% Santa Gertrudis. I might like, you know, there's some things we can do in this ancestry assignment that could split that up between the indicus and Taurus contribution to them. And, you know, the Brahman bull came out as 100% Brahman. So that looks pretty good. We couldn't, you know, the Red Angus we got is all Red Angus, but the Black Angus bull had some Red Angus in him. You know, I think that's partly some of the reference, you know, where there's some, the Angus reference has some haplotypes that, you know, this bull had that weren't in the Black Angus reference. Simmental, I think, came out about where he was, where he should be, with some, you know, Black Simmental with Angus in him, same as the Gelby. You know, so most of this looks pretty good. You know, so, you know, where we supplied the sequence, you know, using a standard library prep, we got good agreement between the GPE, you know, both HD and F250 genotypes, and what Genco called from the downsample British bulls. The Continentals weren't as good, but, I think we could probably get there with, with broader representation of those breeds in the reference panel. And, I think there's also some of the ancestry suggests, looking, adding to that reference for all breeds. The GPE sequence is available for this. Especially on the, making the Indicus Taurus split, I don't know if there's, some way to incorporate both the Dominant Taurus assembly as well as the Brahmin assembly that's now available. And, when I was looking, comparing those results to what we got from the Riptide sequence, my thinking was, somehow the samples were contaminated. And what I hear from people that know better, a lot of that could be attributed to what they call index hopping, where, all the samples in the run have a unique index that identifies that sample. Somewhere in the chemistry, it's misassigned to another sample. So you get, some of the reads wind up being assigned to the wrong individual. And if you remember, we had some variation in DNA concentration of what we provided. One sample was quite a bit higher than anything else, and that contributes to this index hopping. And, they're working on steps to, end the sample handling and library prep that, might mitigate a lot of this. From what I see right now, that, there's a lot of potential for this technology. The low coverage and imputing from the low coverage up to a large number of known sequence variants. So you could, from this, can simply extract the 50K or HD panel or the functional variants and use those in current genetic evaluations. You might look at trying to replace some of what we're currently using in genetic evaluations with variants that might be more likely to actually affect phenotype, so we can reduce dependence on SNP that are NLD with QTL with the actual QTL. And the other advantage of doing that would, we should, from that, if the same QTL has an effect across different breeds, we should be able to get more portable genetic predictions, especially for some novel traits that, we can measure in research herds, but the industry isn't going to get a whole lot of phenotypes on those traits. And the cost of the whole process is, cost per sample is less than any prices of chips that I've heard about. That could have an effect on genetic evaluations if we can, get complete calf crops genotyped and reduce bias that's in current evaluations due to selective genotyping, where not all calves are genotyped. And, there are, a low enough cost might justify genotyping commercial calves for, some of what Lee had been talking about, where, use that to, in sorting calves for management and marketing decisions. The big problem right now is, the accuracy of what was called in this small data set was, too low to think about using in genetic evaluation. But I think those problems are addressable, both for the imputation reference, if we can get broader samples of all cattle. And, there's some steps in the library prep and, just quality control on the DNA going in. It sounds like they're working on some human samples right now with some additional library prep, and they were talking about doing some more cattle. And, so I think, this one, there are a lot of people involved in this that I need to acknowledge, and Paul Doran is over there, Keith Brown, and Joe Pickrell, Jeremy Lee, who's also with us, and Thomas Bariza from GenCove, Stuart, that GeneSeq gave us a challenge on the getting imputation accuracy up, and there are a lot of folks from Clay Center that involved in GPE and tissue sampling, the repository management, the core lab sequencing, and too many. I'm afraid I know I'd miss somebody if I started naming names, so I'll leave it at that.